Hey everyone, welcome to the Mental Health University podcast. It's your host Joel Ingersoll along with co-host Libby Gilliland. And in this episode, we are going to identify five ways to improve mental health over the course of this coming academic year. This is applicable for middle school, high school, and college students. And these are things that people can do outside of regular therapy appointments and also appointments with their prescribing psychiatrist if they're taking medication. These are lifestyle approaches that are really critical to take alongside those modalities to optimize mental health. So tune in and enjoy. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Mental Health University. It's your host, Joel Ingersoll, along with co-host Libby Gilliland. Libby, how you doing?
I am good. Getting ready to move out of Florida and back to Philadelphia. So I'm a world traveler this week, but I'm ready.
So you're moving out of incredibly disgustedly humid weather into less disgustedly humid weather?
Yeah, basically summer in Florida to winter in Philly.
You do realize that like it's supposed to be the other way around where you do winters in Florida and summers up here.
I know, trust me, I'm not happy about it, but it's okay.
Anything for internship, right?
Exactly, anything for the job.
Yeah, so we want to take a dive today into mental health and which is sort of the theme of all of our work and our episodes, but in particular, you know, as this fall semester is approaching and the school year is approaching, to really take a peek at a holistic approach to mental health. And, you know, for many people, they might consider mental health care as simply going to therapy, and we both know that it is extensively more than that.
Yes, it is. There's a lot of different steps to it because, you know, if you do go to therapy, that's fantastic. It's really, really helpful, but you have to implement what you're talking about outside of your therapy session, and there's a lot of steps to that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you're right, and there are a lot of steps to it, and I think that one of the helpful ways to really think about it is it's very integrative into physical health. A lot of the things that we do to improve and maintain and really optimize our physical health are related to our mental health as well. You know, unfortunately, with all best intention of college kids, unfortunately, you know, when many students arrive back on campus, those goals and intentions and plans often fall to the wayside.
Yes, it's very easy to sit here a couple weeks before the semester starts or a couple days before you move in and say, hey, I'm going to do this and this and this, and I'm going to take care of myself, and it's going to be a fantastic semester. And the reality is, it's harder than that. You're going to fall into bad habits again, and you're going to be around hopefully good friends, but sometimes not great friends who are not the best influence, and there's a lot of, you know, bad things that can happen and kind of put you off of your path that you were initially trying to stay on in terms of mental health.
Yeah, so I think, you know, what Libby, I think what you're alluding to is don't party too much, for example, which can really upend the person's mental health. It can, you know, increase things like depression and anxiety and, you know, everything that falls under those categories, motivation, focus, etc. What we'd really like to target are, you know, five areas where people can integrate behaviors and activities within these five lifestyle areas that will really help optimize mental health, in particular with students, though, and certainly with students residing on a college campus.
Yeah, it does all start with kind of creating a plan and figuring out what your semester is going to look like. And, you know, you're going to have fallbacks and things that happen. But again, just having time to reset and assess and figure out what's going right and what's going wrong and using some of these tips will really help you get in the right place and continue to watch out for yourself and take care of yourself over the semester.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one lifestyle category, which, you know, often is most obvious to people, but, you know, there is increasingly more scientific research that validates the importance of exercise. So if we look at that sort of physical health domain and exercise as a part of our lifestyle, that has huge, huge implications on our mental health, on our everything from our mood to attention, concentration, cognitive abilities, stress management. I mean, you name it. Exercise is at the top of the list.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And for our athletes, that's a pretty easy one to check off because that's your job. But I know, like, as I go through the season and get in shape, it really does help me. But even for athletes, and especially for non-athletes, how do you find time for yourself outside of your schedule to exercise the way you want to? Maybe playing 9 holes every day is great, but I want to go on a different kind of walk or like ride a bike or something. So, how do you do that and fit that into your schedule? And, you know, for non-athletes, what is your school gym like? How do you get in? How do you make an appointment? Those are things to figure out now and kind of create that plan before you get back to school.
Yeah, and what you just highlighted to create that plan now before you get back to school and really begin to engage in that plan before you get back to school as well. Most, again, like whether we're talking, you know, if we're talking about exercise and we're waiting to get back to school to start, that normally doesn't work. It might work for a couple of days, it might even work for a couple of weeks, but if we don't create a lifestyle habit of it, then it becomes difficult to maintain, particularly as stress increases over the course of a semester. And without question, whether you're in school or not, as stress increases in our lives, self-care, including things like exercise, the frequency, intensity, and duration of often decreases. To get into the habit now becomes all the more critical.
Yeah, and thinking of exercise as self-care and not as a burden is important as well because, like you said, and I completely agree with you that when you have a lot on your plate, those things like exercise kind of fall off, and you're like, well, I don't want to go to the gym, I don't have time. But if you think of it as, hey, I'm going to take a second and take care of myself and kind of change that mindset, it might do a little bit better for you.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that you know, such a good point that we can play with words there, if that's helpful, you know, to people. So for some people, instead of the word exercise, which they may have very aversive reactions to, just think of it like, all right, I'm going to go out and move for an hour, right? Or I'm going to get a workout in, or I'm going to train, or whatever. You know, labels you want to put on it. But the idea of physical movement, and to be realistic about like what that movement is, like if you've never worked out before in a gym setting, let's say, and you might have this expectation or, you know, sort of this anticipation of like, oh, I have to go there for an hour, I have to go there for 90 minutes. No. You know, let's take this slow. If you go in there and destroy yourself, first of all, you're not going to be able to do it the next day. And then you're not going to want to do it because it's going to feel awful. You know, so, you know, for those people who don't have that type of experience, you know, exercise or movement could mean a ton of different things. It could mean that walk. It could mean going to the gym. It could mean a spin class. It could mean a yoga class. But something that is getting our bodies moving for 30 to 45 minutes, multiple days a week, is a crucial part to it.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many, I mean, TikToks, YouTube videos of workouts that you could do just in your dorm or in your apartment. But if you want to get out and try the gym, like I remember my first time, I was so scared because I didn't know how to use any of the equipment and I thought I was going to embarrass myself. And maybe I did just a little bit, but finding a group of people who already know what they're doing or want to try it with you really helps kind of like make it a social activity as well. Even if you walk on the treadmill and, you know, are talking to your friends or watch a show, it kind of takes the stigma out of it a little bit, makes it easier for you.
Yeah, and Libby, I am so glad that you brought up that TikTok example because I may be sounding somewhat parental right now. And for that, like, I apologize, but I have a very, very close relationship with my trainer who, you know, is just unbelievable. Super, super smart, very, very talented. And we've talked about this topic actually before, and I want to just bring people's I want to raise people's awareness to the tendency to go on to sites like TikTok and Instagram and watch people's workouts and people telling other people like what to do. I would be very careful with that type of information. Because the far majority of those people may not be certified as a trainer. And they may be imparting information and technique that is 100% wrong and actually puts people at risk for injury. So while you might get inspired by it, that's great. If you have experience in working out, that's great. But Libby, as you said too, like for someone who's new to equipment, to watch a TikTok video and then go run into the gym and do it, I don't know that that's the answer. I would definitely consult with someone or friends that have experience at the very least.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you have friends that are athletes who work with trainers daily, I know I have an incredible trainer at LaSalle who has taught my team everything because we're just golfers and we don't know what's going on. And so, you know, talking to them is helpful. And yeah, just get knowledge before you start doing something that could really hurt you. 'Cause there's a lot in the gym that could seriously injure you, so yes, please be careful.
Yeah. Golfers are unreal athletes. Your guy, Rory McIlroy, he gets after it.
Well, yes, but I will say there is a stigma about golfers in the weight room because we're so tiny and we look like we don't know what we're doing, but our trainer has been fantastic and he's like, hey, these golfers, you know, they work hard, they know what they're doing, like, we're gonna get them there. And, you know, it's easier to carry my bag now. Like, I feel stronger. So it really does help. But there was a stigma for a little bit.
Yeah, no, I get it. And you know, that's the other part to this is, you know, certainly a college student, you know, you don't one does not have to necessarily train like the athletic teams do. It's really about finding something that is even, dare I say, fun to engage in. Because if it's fun and we experience benefit from it, we'll value doing it. And so that the behavior continues over time, we'll maintain that behavior.
Oh yeah, and I remember like when I was touring schools, the bigger schools have so many options. I know they're really making health and gyms a priority, and some people have full pools that you can swim in. There's just so many different options, so trying different things out and maybe, you know, you make that a project for the first couple weeks of the semester when you don't have as much schoolwork is find the plan and the activity that really makes sense for you and something you enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you know that dome that lifestyle area of exercise is certainly one of the ways that people can help to improve their mental health during the course of a semester and over their lifetime really. The second one that certainly is directly connected to exercise is nutrition. And there has been just a significant amount of information on the relationship between gut health brain health and mental health. Substantial. It's, you know, we can't even argue it anymore, really. So the relationship between mood and food is of primary significance in terms of things that we can do to improve our mental health. And when I say nutrition, I want to also highlight hydration. So we're going to throw making sure that people stay hydrated, drink enough water, etc. In there as well. Now, I don't know what the menu at the dining hall at LaSalle looks like now, but I do remember it when I was there, and I'm hoping that the range of healthier options has increased.
I don't want to burst your bubble, but unfortunately there's not that much. There's a couple things, but for picky eaters like me, there's not. So I am trying to cook a lot more. I have an apartment now, so cook more at home. But I know my freshman year, that was a big point of stress for me, was eating, going to the dining hall. That is a really big point of anxiety in my life. And I've gotten a lot better about it. And when I first went to therapy, that was the first thing my therapist talked about. Getting used to finding a routine and, you know, fueling your body. And I noticed that as I started eating better and eating more, my mind was a lot better. So it really does have a direct impact. And I guess my question to you is advice for freshmen going in. I saw a TikTok the other day about what do you do on your first day in the dining hall? Just sit by yourself. Like it's a big point of anxiety for a lot of college kids. Like, what do you do?
Yeah. So ideally, no, you don't sit by yourself. Though, if you're comfortable enough to occasionally eat alone and enjoy it, that's fine. You're bringing up a context and a scenario that can be very difficult if we are trying to eat healthy, and that phrase in and of itself is very individualistic. That means different things for different people. So I want to acknowledge that. But if we are a person who's trying to eat healthy and we're sitting across from people who are not, that can be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for athletes with your team, maybe that's a little bit easier because you're kind of all on the same wavelength. But, you know, for non-athletes, I can imagine that that's really difficult. You know, being around people who aren't kind of following the same things as, you know, eating wise that you're trying to follow.
Yeah. So look, I mean, here's maybe just some sort of simple, whether they're adjustments or considerations to bring into, you know, a college semester. So if we think about protein and carbohydrates and fats as sort of those three sort of general categories, in terms of how they fuel our body, and by the way, our brain is included in that. Therein lies the challenge of figuring out like what portion of each of those categories do we need to really focus on for optimal mental health, right? So we know, for example, that too much or processed sugar in general is just toxic to our bodies. It's just awful. And whereas really, really good fats are essential because our brain is 60% plus fat. So it needs that for fuel. It was amazing back when I worked on college campuses. It was at a time where a lot of people avoided moderate to high fat diets, and because they thought that fat was evil. And many fats are actually not evil. They're actually essential. And so as clean as we can get in those categories, becomes really the critical element to it. So lean proteins, getting enough protein is really, really critical. Getting enough healthy fats in our diet is really critical. And also, you know, carbohydrates, that's the real tricky one, right? Because there are just so many bad ones out there with processed foods. So the more that we can sort of minimize the processed stuff that we eat, the better. And really, like, most college campuses and students are challenged by that.
Yeah, it is a big challenge. I mean, you're going from high school where your parents probably cooked for you every night and you could cook for yourself if you wanted to. I know living in the dorm my first year, you're kind of stuck with what the dining hall has, and that's really stressful. But I know, you know, colleges are making health once again a priority and there's more options out there. So really seeking out every option on your campus, figuring out what works best for you. Again, that's something you can look at now, kind of creating that plan is important and will really help you when you get to your first day and not be so overwhelmed with where to go.
Yeah, absolutely. So just sort of general rules of thumb, you know, really be mindful of the sugar. So even when campuses have smoothie bars and or vending machines with pre-made smoothies in them, be sure to check the sugar content, because the sugar in some of those drinks is worse than drinking soda. And that's not healthy. So that's sort of one of those rules of thumb. Just be aware of that sugar content. Also the processed foods that you're eating, the snacking especially. You know, the chips, crackers, Doritos, etc., frozen foods. You know, I get it. I did it. And we want to be mindful of that. And then certainly the carbs that we're eating and when we're eating them. So the types and also when. So if we're having a carb-loaded lunch, and you notice, if you eat lunch at like noon, and you notice by 1 o'clock, for your 1 o'clock class, you're ready to fall asleep, it's time to make an adjustment. You know, so those are a few things that are important to be mindful of. And again, like, everybody's sort of relationship with food, it varies. And one of the things to do while you're in college is to get to know that relationship with food better and create a healthy relationship with it, and what foods you respond to and then what foods you don't.
Yeah, you're gonna learn a lot over your college years just about food. It's a great point, and you know, it's important to know all of those things and understand how food impacts your body and what to do, what not to do, and kind of take that advice and figure out what exactly works for you and kind of build on that through your years.
Yeah, and you know, anyone can Google gut healthy foods and get a pretty exhaustive list of options that, when gut healthy, more often than not mean brain healthy, which then translates into optimal mental health. So exercise, nutrition, hydration, those become those other, you know, a few lifestyle behaviors that are really, really critical. And a third one that, unfortunately, college students are notoriously awful at is sleep. They still do all-nighters, right?
Yes, unfortunately. I have never. I will never. I have to sleep, and I know that. But yes, college kids are queens and kings of the all-nighter. If they're studying or partying or whatever, it's ridiculous and not healthy and makes me sick.
Yeah, it's really quite troubling that it's celebrated, and it's also the way we're socialized around college in some ways, and going to college is, you know, it's a part of it. And but it's a bad part of it. And we did it. I'm sure my mom did it. when she was in college. It is so detrimental to health, both mentally and physically. And by the way, it is, look, you're an athlete, right? What? You're playing for a conference championship and you're going to stay up all night?
Yeah, no.
What athlete in the world would do that? No, they know how important recovery is to performance, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Same thing goes with an academic performance event, a test, exam, presentation, all of it. Got to get sleep.
Yeah, and even if you're a college student who goes out and has class the next day and, wants to skip it, whatever, knowing that you're there, I mean, you've heard this before, you're in college to learn and develop, but get in the habit of not doing that. It's terrible. And, if anything, do it for your own physical health, your mental health. Even if it's not for your 8 a.m. teacher, do it for yourself instead of being miserable the next day and continuing a pattern. Just take care of yourself and know that it's so bad for you.
Super critical, and it just has, again, and we're talking about things like focus, concentration, performance, but also just our general health as well, and how incredibly important that is. Sleep schedules, one of the really interesting things about them, when they get erratic, it's actually the equivalent of creating like perpetual jet lag. And anyone who's experienced jet lag, well, I know that when I experience it, it's awful. It like wipes me out for like a week. And just to get things sort of reset, you're eating at different times, and it's just a big old mess. And sleep becomes this really tricky thing. It's such a precious activity, and necessary activity. And when it gets all like out of whack, it takes time to sort of rehabituate ourselves to a normal sleep cycle. And usually that takes going to bed at the same time every night, getting up at the same time every morning. The closest we can get to doing that over time, the better.
Exactly. Yeah, it's important, and you just hear it all the time. I'm tired from every college student ever. That's a daily quote. And I try to go to sleep as much as I can, but it happens in college, and again, you're gonna have fallbacks, but just trying to create a routine that works for you and cutting your friends off, saying, "Hey, I have to go to bed. Like, this is what's best for me." Being able to speak up for yourself and know when you need to go home, is really, really important.
It might be a difficult conversation, but it certainly can be a very valuable one to have that with a roommate or roommates before the semester starts. Like, hey, heads up on this. And again, it's a tough conversation, but to have that conversation in October, that becomes even more difficult when people's lifestyles and habits start to have already played out. So if you can negotiate that early on, much better.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, talk to them about it now. If it's your best friends, it still doesn't matter. Put it out in the open, because it's going to be even harder to talk to them later about it. But again, just creating those habits for yourself and for all of your roommates and really holding them to it. If they're not following it and not respecting you in the first couple weeks, speak up about it again so it can become a routine.
So exercise, nutrition, hydration, sleep, all important things. And another area, which again, like I know that is certainly highlighted on campuses. In fact, there's, many schools have centers for mindfulness and contemplative science and things like that. But this whole area of mindfulness and to be incorporating activities into our lifestyle again becomes a real a critical measure to take to decrease stress and, improve our mental health. Is that pretty well advertised at LaSalle or?
I would say no. I mean, it's still something I'm working on and trying to figure out myself. We don't really have a ton on it, so I'm interested to hear what do you recommend for students who don't really have those resources and it's not advertised? Where would you start?
I would start with how one defines mindfulness and mindful practices, because a lot of times people, and I'm thinking of a very recent conversation that I had with a college student about this, is, well, I'm not into the spirituality thing. It doesn't have to be that, right? If and we were talking about, like, I think we were talking about, like, yoga, and I'm like, well, okay, let's if we can remove that part of it, if that's not something you're into, then what about just breathing, and just mindful breath work as a starting point? So the range of mindfulness activities are infinite. It's just that I think that people go into it with this preconceived notion that I have to believe in something, higher power or whatever. I'm trying to think of the range of things that I've heard over the years, when all in all, it's kind of like, no, it's sort of like, let's just get into the here and now, take notice of the things that are going on around us, and let's just breathe. With that in mind, people can go to the extent of seeking out those centers and activities on campus, and there will be activities on campus, and people and very, very involved in that, in those efforts. Or it might be downloading an app like, Headspace or Calm, or and just going through some breathing exercises. It could be as simple as that, and then sort of everything in between.
Yeah, I know I have an Apple Watch and there's a little mindfulness app and it'll come up. Like, I swear it's always during the most stressful point of my day. It's like mindfulness. I'm like, I can't do this right now, but I want to start getting in the habit of taking those notifications and saying, hey, it's time for me to take a deep breath and reset. And the Headspace app, I do have that, and we get it through LaSalle Athletics, which is really great from them to give us that resource. But they have meditations and different sleep exercises and things like that, and it's been really helpful to me over the years.
Yeah, I know that app as well, and I get that sort of breathe pulse throughout the day as well. And look, it's the simplest place for people to start because we have to do it anyway, right? So what ends up happening when people become more stressed is they probably don't even notice this, but they move from belly breathing to chest breathing, which is indicative of stressful breathing. And we want to get back to that belly breathing. So, practicing even with right hand on our belly and taking a deep breath through our nose and feeling our belly rise, holding that breath and then letting it out our nose and feeling our belly fall. I mean, I breathe that way when I do yoga. And, to become more mindful of it, we can then use it at times when we really need it, whether it's before a test or, as midterms are approaching or finals or, whatever it may be. But integrating mindfulness activity into our lifestyle is as important as, sleep, nutrition, hydration, physical exercise.
Yeah, exactly. Just understanding and starting small with it and finding points in your day where it's necessary or you can find time to reset and work on mindfulness.
Yeah, Libby, and finding time, right? So that leads into this last part of it, and is designing a plan and really first understanding the relationship to all these things that we're talking about, and performance. It has everything to do with performance. So, and it dovetails into the significance of keeping a calendar of some type. And putting these activities in that calendar, anchoring them with specific times so that we prioritize them. Design that plan now.
Yeah, making time for yourself, not booking yourself until you literally can't move anymore, because that's what I do, and it's so terrible. I mean, I always say yes. If it's a school thing, a career opportunity, I'm always saying yes, and it's great, but sometimes it kind of spirals me into a disaster because my room's a disaster and my mind is a mess, and I've taken zero time for myself in the week. So, get your planner out that you ordered online from TikTok and write it all down. Get all of the thoughts out of your head and onto paper or onto, some online calendar, and make that time for yourself and schedule it now so you don't say yes to everything the first week of the semester and you're already struggling going into your second week.
Yeah, I mean, great suggestions. And you use the phrase that I absolutely love is self-care. And to think of that calendar as, not only that academic calendar, but it's a self-care calendar. And we need to be kind of peppering ourselves every day, multiple times, with self-care gestures throughout the course of the semester. And well, ideally, throughout our lives. And including all of those things that we highlighted today, physical exercise, nutrition, hydration, sleep, mindfulness, and making adjustments to all those things as necessary.
Yeah. And I love the phrase, you're the person who has to live with yourself. So don't people please, just make sure you're taking care of yourself, taking that time for yourself. Because at the end of the day, you're the person that you have, and you have to make sure that, you're really making yourself a priority over anything else.
Absolutely. So we want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Hit us up with your questions. Have the email in our notes there. And thanks for tuning in, everyone.
That's a big concern. I mean, it's probably one of the more frequently expressed concerns that I've heard when consulting with students concerned about a friend in throughout my entire career.
Yeah, it's a scary position to be in because at the end of the day, you just want to be there for that person, but you don't want them to be upset with you. At a point, I feel like you have to put aside the pride of it, and if you're looking out for your friend and you're seriously concerned, you can't fix them, and that's the best thing to do.
Exactly. So ultimately, while students aren't responsible for the choices that that person makes about taking their life, the residual effect on the students, are exactly what you were saying. What could I have done differently? What are the parents going to say to me? Oh my gosh, the range of feelings of guilt, remorse. I mean, it's really incredibly heavy for students to carry. Oh, and then by the way, you got to go to class and perform as an athlete or whatever else there is. The real one of the real challenging parts, Olivia, and I don't know if this has been part of like discussion, or workshops at your school or whatever. But students often pose the scenario, very common scenario, of hearing from a friend who maybe is even sort of parasuicidal, where they may notice like cut marks or some other kind of self-injurious behavior, and or an expression of suicide, where they'll then say, if you tell my parents, or if you tell anybody this, I'll never talk to you again. So it's a form of emotional blackmail, really. And students feel like completely boxed in. Or worse, if you say anything, then I'll kill myself. Right? So you feel like entrapped, really. Emotionally, and that's a horrible place to be.
Yeah, that really takes a toll on that person, not just being in that situation and that pressure. And, you know, again, you just want to protect that person, but I bet, you know, in that situation, you're scared that if you do say something, you'll make it worse.
Yeah, and you know, it's also challenging as well because you live with these people, or you might, right? Or you're on a team with these people, or you're in a club or a sorority or whatever it is, like fraternity, like you're with these people. So you're aware of it, and that's stressful. And you're there to be a student and develop and take classes and excel as well. And that kind of a stressor can impact all of those things. So one, a couple of things that I encourage students to use as, and think of them as sort of barometer points, is if the friend is always sort of seeking you out to discuss these big, heavy things, right? Suicidal thoughts or whatever. Or if your awareness of them, like how they are at parties or whatever, like you worry about them because, well, last week they did this, or the week before they did this. So when it becomes sort of a chronic stressor for you, because you're not their therapist, you're not their psychologist, you're not their parent. And when that becomes sort of an overload, that's usually a really good barometer to say, like, hey, like we need to bring some professionals into the mix here. And geez, Libby, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of times, way more than 100, where students have scheduled to see either me or someone else on the staff, another counselor or whatever, to discuss ways to approach the friend that they're concerned about. So it's more of a like a consultative opportunity. And again, you know, that's confidential stuff, provided that they're not sharing that, hey, my roommate or friend like made an attempt. So if you think of those resources as opportunities to brainstorm, that's usually and better to do with a professional.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
the third party who is can be really objective and say like, hey, we need to call the parents right now. Like, you know, I know you're the friend and everything, and I don't want to minimize that, but this is going to be a lot worse if they do something.
Yeah, going to someone without bias is really helpful instead of going to your other group of friends that may have, you know, a close connection with the friend or, you know, any sort of relationship.
Absolutely. And the frequency, and you know, I mentioned those statistics earlier, of how often this occurs. And lots of times they'll be like, we don't read about the 1,100 people, right? One of the things that Active Minds does, and you know, the first time that I went to an Active Minds event, it was mind-blowing because one of the things that they do is they do this backpack display on a part of campus. So they unload 1,100 backpacks to represent the number of college kids that commit suicide every year. And more, most of those backpacks have letters on them, whether that was the suicide note that the student wrote, or maybe a family member or whatever. And when you walk through these backpacks that are spread out on a huge area, it is so incredibly powerful. Like on campuses with thousands of people, when they, you know, when they do this, and kids are walking through it, you can hear a pin drop. And you know, it evokes a lot of emotion. It evokes a lot of like eye-opening, like whoa, and a lot of questions and conversations, which is necessary.
Exactly. I think a lot of conversations happen, during the month, September or after a suicide occurs in a community. And then they kind of go through the motions and mourn the loss, and then it goes away until something else happens. And it's kind of this cycle that needs to be broken because it's happening all over the world. How do you keep that conversation going? And I think, that club is doing a fantastic job of ending the stigma and talking about it. But, on college campuses, it's hard to talk about suicide. It's a scary subject, but I think we always have to be aware of it and, really know who you're talking to, know how to get help, know how to help a friend, and just knowing those resources and looking out for yourself. And college is really hard. I mean, we all know that, and I think college has its way of triggering mental health in a lot of ways that other schools can't. So just realizing that and knowing your resources is really important.
Yeah, and you bring up a really good point. The stress that is experienced, for college kids, it occurs for a variety of reasons. And when it becomes collective, and there's a collection of stressors alongside like a baseline level of depression or a baseline level of anxiety or bipolar disorder, whatever else. That puts people, certainly more at risk. But what it also does is it really highlights the necessity to take charge of your mental health and to make it a priority. And that takes work. It takes designing a lifestyle that's conducive to it. It's not just about going to therapy. I mean, that's a big part of it. That's very important. However, it's one component. Everything from, and you and I have talked about multiple areas, nutrition, sleep, hydration, exercise, meditation. I mean, there's just essential minerals. I mean, you go on and on and on. If you go to college above Atlanta, that you get your vitamin D levels checked this time of year. Because once it gets cold in places like Philly, you got a couple of months. But I don't know, Michigan, Wisconsin, those northern schools where it gets darker and colder quicker. And we're not outside as much, so we're not getting as much vitamin D. Could that have an impact on mood? Absolutely.
Yeah. My final kind of thought for you and question is, we know that as a college student, you kind of take on a lot of different things. You wear a lot of different hats. Athletes, if you're working a job, if you're taking extra classes, or you're just doing normal five classes schedule of a college student, it's really difficult and you're handling a lot. At what point do you have to kind of push back and take care of yourself? Like, when can you notice that you're not doing well and, is skipping a class gonna help? Is, saying no to an activity, what does that kind of look like?
So in the ideal world, it would be the exact reverse of what you said, right? So it's the classes, it's the sports, it's this, and then it's kind of like, okay, well, with all that, how do I fit mental health priority and lifestyle into that? It should be, I'm prioritizing my mental health and my physical health because they go hand in hand. And then I'm building everything around that priority, right? Because anything that interferes with that, we gotta make an adjustment to. We got it all wrong. We could do 3 hours on this subject, and I probably be a bit more expressive in terms of the language that I use, because it's systematic. It's really a much of this, I believe, is a product of a larger system of everything. What kids eat, how they are socialized, how they are pressured academically, socially, athletically, how there is little to no education on recovery and mental health practices. The signs are there. Pre-signs, the colorful signs, we promote mental health awareness, but the action steps on it are non-existent. So until that happens, this becomes the perpetual struggle. The system has to change. It just does. And until it does, Libby, me and you and the 20 million other college kids, we have to take charge of it. So how do how, right, so how do we do that? We start very simply, right? Like, and people, I encourage, whether it's clients to do this or I do it or whatever, like, well, how do we do that? Well, think of it like every day, just these sort of micro doses of self-care gestures throughout the day. You wake up, pour 16 to 18 ounces of water in a container, whatever, your hydro flask or whatever you use. Take a quarter teaspoon of really great sea salt, organic sea salt that doesn't have any crap in it. Squeeze of lemon, shake it up, drink it. That's a gesture. Follow it up with a walk outside in bare feet. That's a gesture. Just don't step on glass. There are all these sort of simple gestures that we need to include throughout the course of our day, anchoring our days with it. We haven't done the midterm episode yet, right? But even between now and midterms, don't do all-nighters. You're an athlete. It's the worst thing in the world for you.
Yeah, it is.
Right. So as a student taking a test, it's a performance moment. Why in the world? Right. So everything that we do kind of adds to this. And then what happens is, under that pressure, we minimize the psychological health care.
Yeah.
Stress increases, self-care decreases. Classic.
Yeah. Oh, and that word that you brought up, pressure, academically, athletically, socially, is so impactful for pretty much every college kid because they're under some sort of pressure. If it's
Yes.
from their friends, oh my gosh, please come to this party. We have to go with you, and you don't want to go. You have to find the strength within yourself to figure out how to not people please and not go, to protect yourself and look out for yourself. And I've found I'm a senior now. It's taken me too many years to say no to things. If I'm not 100% on something, I'm not gonna say yes, and I'm gonna stay home or do something else that's gonna help me and my mental health. And sometimes, going to a party is not that for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is one of those topics, Libby, that again, like, could be hours long. But I think what we've highlighted is the necessity to prioritize our psychological health, our physical health, to use our campus resources, both whether it's for ourselves, if we're ever feeling suicidal, or whether it's to help a friend, and how to do that, and also that there is a national suicide hotline, and to know what these resources are, so that if you need to access them yourself, and or for a friend, that they are available. And they are available on every college campus. That's a definite. And we hope that people keep the conversation going. I mean, we could talk about things like, heart disease and anxiety and gingivitis, like all these other things, right? It's kind of like, well, this is pretty important too.
Yeah, it's never a bad thing to ask for help.
Exactly. So with that in mind, we want to thank everybody for tuning in. We know it's a pretty heavy topic, but we also know that it's a critical topic to be talking about, and it's one of our other sort of efforts to challenge the stigma associated with mental health and diagnoses and things like that. And it's a very, very common thing, a very, very common concern. We hope that people are getting their help out there that they need.
Absolutely.
So thanks for tuning in, everyone. We will catch up with you soon. Libby, as always, thanks again.
Thank you.